Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now. Okay, Greyhawk fans, it's time for another episode of Greycast, one of my most favorite things to do. Not quite as awesome as playoff hockey, and we'll get to that in a minute, but it's pretty awesome nonetheless. And Mateus and I are super excited, aren't we, Mateus?
It's another episode? You mean they haven't kicked us off the air yet?
They have not. The internet is still welcoming us, despite our best efforts. And it's another, this will be our second go-around now with one of my most favorite creators in all the land, Carlos A.S. Lysing, also by his professional name, the creative force behind Castle Entertainment. Carlos, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
It is tremendous to have you on, man. Yeah,
pleasure to have you on. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's an honor to be here, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So we're coming off of, Carlos and I are coming off of a really fun weekend in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin a little while ago. I'm still riding some of that high, and I got to check off a bucket list and play at Carlos's table. And that was just super cool thing. So thank you again for that. That was wonderful.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome how it all came together. I was so pleased that we could get you into a game.
Yeah, and it was such a cool group of people, none of whom I don't think I'd ever met. I've seen a couple of them who were regulars in some of your stream games there for a while, right?
Yeah, there were a couple people there that have been in streams with me. But to be honest with you, there were a couple of them that were unknown quantities to me as well.
Yeah. That's what it worked out great. We had a good time. We hung out in Cavrick's Cove and we had ourselves a right scary time. But we wanted to catch up with all the cool things that are happening at Castle Entertainment. And then Mateus has got a couple of lines of questioning that I think our listeners will enjoy. We always try to throw a little red meat to our listeners who fancy themselves game masters. And tonight or today will be no different. But first of all, Carlos, just describe for our listeners, in case there's any out there who aren't really familiar with Castle Entertainment and what you do. Because I get it. I know I own a bunch of your stuff, but I'd really rather you explain that because I know you're going to, you know, say it, you know, better than I could. That's for sure.
Of course. Well, I started my background is really from the Halcyon days of the early days of TSR, when I was started gaming and back in 76, 77. And much like a lot of my contemporaries from that age, I was a huge enthusiast of the World of Greyhawk and a big Gary Gygax fan in particular. And as time went on, and obviously everyone knows the tale of how TSR was lost to Gary, and then was supported initially by Wizards through Paizo Entertainment, and then the license was revoked for Dungeon & Dragon magazine. When all that was going down, and eventually Greyhawk was out of publication, I kind of envisioned this. I was horrified and envisioned this possibility that one day we might have Greyhawk as a dead language, almost, that people really, there was no official support behind this, the setting. You know, would people forget about the setting entirely and just move along? And so Gary's life work was lost. And to me, that was unacceptable, because I felt I'd owed him such a debt as a young man for teaching me a love of language and fantasy and just hours and hours of entertainment. So I decided that I elected myself to support Greyhawk in a published manner. Obviously I can't do that directly because I don't own the IP. So what I do is I write modules, adventure modules, both through my Patreon and through a publication and through my website, castleentertainment.com, with that are Greyhawk with the names changed slightly to protect the innocent and me from lawsuits.
Right. Kind of like scrubbing off the serial number, so to speak.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's so captures the vibe of Greyhawk and the history of Greyhawk without, you know, laying claim to its IP. It's so masterfully done. So how many adventures has Castle Entertainment published now, Carlos?
We have now 30 published adventure modules, and then we have countless mini modules. And when I say mini modules, they're anywhere between 4 to 28, 30 pages that are done through my Patreon.
Yeah, nice.
And published stuff is anywhere between 60 to 100 pages. So,
and all of your modules are set for Osric, the 1E retro clone.
That
right?
Yeah, I'm really comfortable with being an old school gamer. I'm really comfortable and conversant with the 1E system primarily. And again, you know, to make sure that I'm respecting IP properly and things like that, going with an open source game system like Osric that that replicates 1E without, you know, infringing on anyone's rightful legal.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that means once again, if you're a listener who hasn't taken a look at Castle's games and you play any of the OSR systems, maybe you play 1E, 2E, maybe you play OSE or any of the BX 1E Swords and Wizardry, any of the old school systems, you're not going to find any problems picking up this module, these modules, and just going with it.
Yeah, and I think that there's one other thing I'd like to throw in there as well as my modules are adventure modules, but as I just mentioned a few minutes ago, they're about 100 pages, 70, 80, 100 pages. The reason I do that is because they're not really meant to just be adventure modules. When I'm writing something, I'm also kind of writing them as a regional source book.
Mm-hmm. That's right? Awesome.
And I think that that's important because, again, there's so much open area in the world of Greyhawk. There's so much that great unknown. And I'm not trying to define it per se for people out there, because I think one of the beauties of Greyhawk is that open space. But to give people ideas about or give them additional lore that they can use, that's what I like to do with my modules. So I take areas that aren't explored in the Flaness, maybe like the area just north of the Burnial Forest, for example. There's never been anything said over there. So I will write something about that area and you'll get some source book material as well as an adventure.
That's cool. What are your favorite place in Greyhawk to write?
My favorite place is Perrinland. I absolutely love Perrinland. I had as a gamer myself when I was just a player, I adventured primarily in that area. My long standing character was in Perrinland. So I love that area. It's got that proto-Germanic kind of feel to it that I like to capture. I think it's kind of or really truly it's supposed to be kind of proto-Swiss.
Swiss, yeah.
It really kind of dovetails more towards the Germanic side than the Swiss, I would say, in more recent publications. So I kind of like writing in that area. It gives me the kind of a cultural touchstone that I can use while I also have that familiarity of being a player in that area. But truly, I like writing in any area that hasn't been developed in Greyhawk as a writer. I like having that that virgin snow to cut, if you want to use a ski analogy there, and just kind of make it a little bit, leave our imprint on that as well.
Now,
blaze a trail.
Are your renamings consistent across your modules?
They are.
So do you have like a version of Anna's map with all of the names changed or something?
No, I do not have that released officially. If you follow through my modules, you'll be able to use the one name, one nomenclature. It follows all throughout all the other ones. that I've been asked to do a Rosetta Stone for my modules in the past, but the reason I haven't done that is I often wonder if doing that would be a little bit too, that would be a little bit too close to infringement of IP for the for the copyright holders. Maybe they would be a little bit upset with that.
A little translation-y, kind of close to the bone.
I don't think without their permission, I would. That might be a little bit too close to the fine.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I love most about your adventures, Carlos. Two things: the way you write. You know, Greyhawk has a kind of a history of being very sandboxy and kind of stripped down, like Gary just gives you the pieces, and in the modules, you know, you read Against the Giants, all the old modules tells you, please do not, this is not scripting, this, you know, just take this and then turn it into your thing. Where when you write, there's that element, but it's so prosaic and there's so much narrative, and then your NPCs, you drop so many individuals into the area. I love that. And even like in a case like in The Witching Hour, right? So there's this ecology in that adventure that resides where it takes place. These relationships between the individuals in that dungeon or that ecology is tremendous, because so many old classic Greyhawk modules, the dungeon version, are just room with a thing, room with a thing, room. And there's maybe, you know, like Into the Unknown had a few relationships, but not like the depth that you go to connect things. I love that about your, they're very storybooky in that way, but you don't micromanage. Like, you can easily sandbox inside of that. I love that.
I think it's important to see how these things relate to one another, because if you've ever read some of the early modules, a lot of them will say in the preamble to the module that monsters in this module will fight intelligently and will use resources to the best of their ability. And they'll say things like that, right? Well, it's very difficult for a DM sometimes to make monsters fight intelligently if they don't understand what that monster knows about the environment around them and how they relate to it. And so, for example, let's say I have a monster, a Merilith, and for example, the Stargazer in the module that you're referring to. If I don't mention how she relates to the monsters in the rooms around her, then it's very hard for a DM to maybe say just off the cuff. I mean, they can obviously make up their own details, but right off the cuff, it's difficult for them to say, okay, well, how will she use these things to her advantage?
Yep. Yeah, they're just really well-crafted, I think, is the best way I can think to describe. They're like artisanal modules. There's so much thought given to the narrative and the details, and they're just fun to read. Like, the first thing I do when I get one, I just read the damn thing, because it's enjoyable. So that's a good flavor for our listeners. For some, it's probably a revamp of what they already know about your work. For newer listeners, it's a great kind of peek behind the curtain. And again, Castle Entertainment is little C-A-S-L, capital E for entertainment, and then entertainment. That's .com, castleentertainment.com. That's where we can find you on socials. So if you haven't checked it out, I cannot say enough good. Good stuff. So part of what we wanted to do today was find out, like, what have you been doing lately? What have you been working on? What's new? And then we'll get into Mateus has got a couple of thoughts that he wants to ask.
Well, sure. Absolutely. Well, the last thing that we just released was Haunting the Chapel, which was our module G4. It was originally a module that was commissioned by GrogCon in Orlando, Florida for their official module. We released that to the public a couple months ago. While I was at GaryCon, I was playtesting a number of different modules, and they will be the ones that are imminently released. Most notably, the current one that's going to be out there almost immediately is C18, Within the Womb of Night. Within the Womb of Night is the finale to my Sanguine Labyrinth trilogy of modules. For those of you who are huge Greyhawk fans out there, you may know that there is a dungeon setting called the Dungeon of Bleeding Walls that was mentioned in a paragraph in the book I Use the Evil. Well, I have expounded upon that quite a bit, and it's a 9-level mega dungeon that it takes place in the Rovers of the Barrens area, and I've now finished the final 3 levels of it, and you can now enjoy all three modules. There's probably about 300 pages worth of material for it. And it is pretty harrowing, pretty deadly. And it talks about stuff that has roots all the way to the beginning of time in of Orth. So I'm really proud of that piece. It probably got some of the best reviews, the first module, Sanguine Labyrinth, did of any of my modules. So the opportunity to finish it on a high note, I'm really proud to say that I think I did some of my better work in the end of that one.
That's really cool.
And finally, right now, what I'm working on is right now I'm staring at it as we speak on my laptop, which is C10, or excuse me, A10, which is called Crescendo and Coda. And that puts an end to my Slave Lords modules, or Flesh Trader modules, as it were, for me, when I file off the numbers. It is the final battle against the Slave Lords. So hopefully you guys will get a chance to see those real soon and enjoy it. I expect Within the Womb of Night to come out officially in May for release for people to purchase. And I expect 3 months later than that, Crescendo and Coda to be available.
Very cool. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, Matthias.
Here's a question. What do the letter code numbers on your modules indicate?
Well, A is was originally the, if you have followed the old TSR model, the Slave Lords modules were A1 through 4. And
right.
it was released as a, that's kind of a prequel to those later in the hardback Slave Lord books. But so what I did was the very first module I released was called Kill Marquesa, and it was released at a Gary Con about maybe 7 years ago. This was before I even knew I was a company, and I decided I was just going to call it A5 as kind of an wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This is the succession to the Slave Lords modules. So ever since then, every one of my Slave Lords modules has been an A series module, A6, A7, A8, A9, A10. Well, the other ones, the C series of modules were competition modules in the vein of Tomoa Chan and Ghost Tower of Inverness. So they were meant to be run at conventions as tournament modules.
Gotcha. Yep.
The G series of modules is for GrogCon. That was released for them. I have a DC series of modules that was done for DaveCon, which was for, they were commissioned by DaveCon. I have an ID series, which is Ice and Dice, that was done for that convention. And finally, the other one that you might know about is the CH series, which is nearest and dearest to my heart. And that's the charity series of modules. I'm a big believer in charities, in particular animal related charities. And so you'll see me release stuff under the CH title, Tears That Forever Stain, which is for the Cheetah Conservation Fund, or Lost.
That was so good, dude. That was so good.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so
much. I got to play in that charity stream a couple years ago. That was so good.
Probably my favorite module.
Yeah.
Because it is, not only did I put a lot of love into that one, but I also feel like that one, it supports such a good cause that it's one of those things that it's really close to my heart. But yeah, everything that you see as far as my codes like that, that's what they relate to, is they're for the different things that either they were written for, or where the or they follow on from the TSR nomenclature, or they're for the purpose behind the module.
Got you. So what as far as printed modules, that kind of gets us up to speed with what's coming out or what has recently come out. What about, is there anything happening with the Castle Entertainment Twitch stream? What's going on there, man?
Well, right now the Castle Entertainment Twitch stream is on hiatus for the time being because I've just started my Patreon back up. And for those of you guys who have been in a Patreon campaign, it is there's a lot of material that you have to write for it. I've been stockpiling material now for about 6 months on it. And I will be able to start doing Twitch stuff here in the relatively near future. And I hope to do so. In fact, I've just been commissioned by a private gamer to run some stuff for them. I'm supposed to be running Expedition the Barrier Peaks for a small group up in Calgary. And they have asked me to, they've asked me to do it over the course of a few adventures. And hopefully I will be able to Twitch that to run that over a Twitch stream. But the Patreon, I did want to mention that as
Yes.
It's important to me because really that's what kind of fuels me being able to write my modules. As you know, I have a day job as an engineer, for those of you guys who know. And when I have that job, everything I do pretty much for all my stuff comes out of my own pocket. The things that supplement that are my module sales, but more than that is my Patreon. And it's a good deal, I think, because not only every month are you getting three character sheets, you're getting a magic item, a monster, a spell of the month, you're all of which have art to them. You're getting either a PDF of the module, or also a mini module. In addition to every 3 months, you're also getting the module of the month. Like, for example, next month before, or this month, excuse me, before anybody has a chance to get it, all my patrons got within the womb night that were of the tier that they could were eligible for it. So Patreon right now has got the most of my focus. And mm-hmm. then once I'm done getting that all ready to go again, I can start doing the Twitch stuff again. Nice. Because Twitch stuff, as you guys both know, is there's a lot of it's a laborious process.
It is.
To be doing online, it's more than you think, because when you're doing a module, yes, I'm laying out the module and everything like that, but that's for publication. That does not do anything for how I have to lay it out when I'm doing it online and running it for a Twitch audience. Like, right. I'm having to make tokens. I'm making the map so it can be projected properly. I'm making a game environment. There's just a lot that goes into it.
There sure is. Tons. Yeah, I've hit pause on my streaming, just same reasons, just a lot going on. And it is a lot of fun, but it is a lot of work. So it's hard to balance.
I think that there's there's a lot of value to it, because you can never, one thing that I think is when you're a creator, it's easy to put the cart before the horse a bit and forget the reason why you do this is for the game. The game, yeah. the material can never drive the game. The game has to drive the material. And I think that that's really important. Like, for example, if my modules weren't being run or played or whatever, or were being used as source books, there would really be no purpose for it. So the game really is what ends up being the driver for it, not the other way around. So for me, actually having a Twitch game to it, then all of a sudden I have that vehicle. And that's important to keep in
mind. Yep, I'm with you there. Yeah, and I just want to say I've been a Patreon for a couple of years, I think, and it's a good way to just get a little content, stay in touch with what you're working on, and that's a thing I need to be a little more, because there's a little community that's attached to that, and I really need to kind of get myself dialed in with some of those folks. It would benefit me as a GM and just as a D&D nerd for sure.
Absolutely, I think that there's also the thing though. One thing I never want people to feel like is when they're members of the Patreon, I love their feedback and I love the fact that they interact with me and things like that, but I never want people to feel beholden to do so, because I realize that people are busy and they're already giving me their support by doing that. I never want them to feel like they have obligations to me on top of that. You're already giving me your support. Okay. That's more than I could ask for. So I don't, I'm always, the necessity of respecting the time of the people who support me is very important to me.
Yep. For me, the Patreon as a game master, as a student of earlier editions, as a student of Greyhawk, it's a resource as much as it is a passion and a hobby. So that's one of the reasons. And then I really dig your stuff, man. I'm just a fan hobbit, man. I'm just gonna say it, right? So to support a little bit through Patreon is like absolutely my honor. So
people like you are the kind of people I write the books for to begin with. Is that I don't it's a labor of love. I'm not getting rich off of it by any stretch of the
imagination. You're not? I thought all creators got rich.
No.
Is that a fallacy?
It's probably a break even, slightly more than a break even.
Yeah. I mean, that's a win, man. I mean, that's a win.
Yeah.
That's a huge win. Yeah.
I think what's important is to remember that that, you know, so because of that, because it's a break-even proposition, if it's not being fueled by your love of the setting or some desire, internal desire, it's real easy to just throw in the towel. And I haven't thrown in the towel because I have that love of the setting and because I get feedback from people like yourself that really appreciate it and love it. So that's the fuel light for me. That's Carlos fuel.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I tell you, the print quality when you purchase a Carlos module, they're all printed color covers. They look like the old school D&D modules. The inside is high quality. You have an artist or two that you work with who does brilliant work. So these aren't just like, you know, bar napkin stapled together, you know, purple Ditto machine like the good old days. Like you probably got a couple boxes of that laying around somewhere from the good old days, but
I
these are
do.
nicely produced modules. They're really nice.
You know what? I'm going to actually break some news for you on your podcast
Let's
here.
do it, man.
Well, you mentioned artists that I'm working with right now. I'm in talks right now. She's doing a tryout for me. A lot of you out there probably are familiar with Darlene Pakul, who did the original Greyhawk map. And
Yeah.
Darlene, dear friend of mine, and because she's a dear friend of mine, her niece is an artist, Gwendolyn. And Gwendolyn, I am in the middle of doing tryouts with right now to see if she will be able to do some art for Castle
Cool.
Entertainment. So getting the newest,
Yeah.
being a legacy artist like her as to do our stuff, I think has it is a nice, it's kind of a bookend to the way the hobby has, and it's a nice touchstone
That's very
for.
cool because that's a
That is very cool.
familial tie. You know, Darlene is super gracious. You see her at, like, I've met her at Gary Con, and I, you know, that damn poster map from the 83 box set was my wallpaper when I was, you know, my bedroom growing up, man. That was, it's like the music you listen to is kind of a soundtrack to your life. Well, that map, I spent hours and hours and hours staring at that damn Darlene map, you know, and meeting her was like meeting, you know, you're a hero. I mean, it's just so cool. So to see that legacy continues tremendous. Yeah.
Whenever I get a text from her or something like that, because as I mentioned, we're friends, and it's very surreal to me because I have that same response that you do. It's kind of like getting a text from David Bowie or something like that, or Prince or somebody like that. That you're just like, I grew up idolizing your stuff. I can't even believe that you're texting me like,
Yeah.
hey, how's your cat doing? What?
That's awesome. That is awesome. So, Mateus, you got a couple questions, right, man, to get
Yes, I have a question before my questions.
okay, a pre-question.
A pre-question. So,
Of
Carlos,
course.
you get the chance to write your dream module. You've gotten all the time in the world, all your artists lined up, you've gotten all the stamps you need. What is the dream module?
Oh my goodness, is that a question or what? First off, my module, I can tell you what my module is not. My module is not Castle Greyhawk.
Okay,
I
good.
think a lot of people will say that their module was Castle Greyhawk, but it is not. To me, Gary Gygax is the only one who should be writing Castle Greyhawk itself. Even I have a lot of respect for creators like Joe Block and people like that who have taken their own stabs at it. And I do think that Joe's is a really great, worthy successor to it. But to me, those things have already been done or are the domain of somebody else.
Sure.
I would prefer not to touch on them. My, if I had the absolute carte blanche, the module to write, I would do one of two things. I would do a rewrite, reconception of Five Shelby One slash Howl from the North, because those modules were so poorly done, I felt, and I thought that the denouements of them were so bad that yet they took such great source material. I would love to do those the way that I think that they should be done. But more than that, many of you guys know out there in your audience, and you too guys know as well that I'm working on my own personal project, Fireland. Which is going to be taking place over in the Solnor, middle of the Solnor Ocean. I would like to be able to have an official Fireland. I'd like to be able to not sell that I would be, like to be able to use the actual place names and everything like that for a module. Firelin, when I do release it, is going to have all the place names and everything, but it's going to be a free product. That's it's worth it to me to keep it pure like that. But man, would I love to be able to sell it, because right now it's like an 800 page mega project with full art covered by Jeff Easley, all this good stuff.
Wow. He's wow.
I would love to be able to actually do that the way that I fully envision it.
If DM's Guild ever opened itself up to Greyhawk, would you unfile the serial numbers off and put some modules on there, or would you keep your thing going?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do the DM Guild thing. And the reason why is because I feel like you cede too many of your personal rights to your material through DM's Guild. And quite frankly, right now, and I'm going to be blunt, I don't trust Wizards of the Coast with the Greyhawk IP anymore. Seeing what they've done in the last few years, some of the other settings.
Or about to do.
and what they've done even with our setting, consistently taking our source material, our legacy, and giving it to other settings like Forgotten Realms or what have you. I don't trust them anymore with Greyhawk, and so I would continue to publish as I do. The only way that I would stop publishing right now is if I felt the Greyhawk was in credible hands and was being supported properly. I would stop that day publishing if I felt that way. Castle Entertainment was only written, like I said, was only devised and created because I felt there was a vacuum, there was a void, and I was scared. I was scared for the future of the setting. Yeah. If I mm-hmm. felt it was stable and everything was good again, I would love to be able to just go back and enjoy it with everybody else.
Yeah. Well, this is a good segue into the second half of our program. And when I think of your modules and how well written they are, I mean, I have about 20 of them. Oh, myself, the PDFs, but you know, I've got about 20 of them, and they're well written and they're good. So here's my question for you.
Okay.
A lot of us DMs have to make our own adventures on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is no published adventure. Maybe you're in a spot of the Flannis or on Orth that is just not developed by anybody. And right. Or maybe your players have messed things up and now the timeline's different. And now, so you have written modules. What advice? Here's the big question. And we can break this down into smaller questions as we go, but what advice as a module writer can you give to DMs who are trying to make an adventure for Thursday night's game?
Well, the very first thing I would suggest as far as being a writer goes, there's two pieces of structural information I would like to offer. And the first being is something that Jim Ward taught me. Actually, let me go back and frame this answer a little bit. I'm just like you guys in that I am standing on the shoulders of giants, okay? And everything that I have learned and I've done, a lot of it is mine, sure, but it's all built upon the work of other people before me. And there's a lot of wisdom that some of these early creators can bestow upon you. Jim Ward taught me always work from an outline, for example. I think it's important to have an outline for your module, your adventure. Now, one thing that you have to remember is that the best laid plans of DMs are always, always, always spoiled by players. So 100%. Don't necessarily make your outline like you're telling like a novel, okay? Right. But have a lot of if-thens built in there. For example, right. You know that you're going to be in one part of the map. Let's say you're going to be in the land of black ice. If they go north, do this. If they go south, this is there. Give yourself a little framework and a short may even if it's just a sentence or two, just give yourself a little bit of an outline to work from, because that way you're not so off the cuff. You have a little
Right.
bit of lore at your fingertips. You
Right.
know the kind of things that you want to emphasize when you're in those areas. And when you emphasize certain things, player characters pick up on those and they will run with them themselves. But if you don't give them any kind of direction at all, that's when you're in trouble as a DM, because then you're flying by the seat of your pants completely. So working from an outline and having a little bit of a skeleton structure that's loose enough that it can accommodate player agency, that is really, really of high value to you. The second piece of advice I would give a fledgling module writer or an adventure writer is was given to me by Rob Kuntz. You guys may have, Rob Kuntz was a player character for Robolar, Gary's almost one of his adopted children nearly. I have a lot of respect for Rob and what he means to our hobby and to Greyhawk in particular. And Rob often taught me that to make sure everything stays magical. And when I say that, I mean, if you've ever read any of his work, whether it be Morgan Cainan's Fantastic Adventure, WG5, or whether it be for some of his other published modules that he does through Black Blade or things like that, like Dark Druids, you will see that almost nothing that Rob does is standard. There's no such thing as a standard magic item. There's no such thing as a standard monster. There's no such thing. I highly, highly, highly recommend that DMs do that. And the reason being that, especially if you have player characters in your group or players that are very experienced, there's nothing quite like, and I remember this very vividly when I went to Gary Con the first time. I was running a module and I described a monster, and almost in chorus around the whole table, everybody said the monster, they said the armor class, they said the weaknesses. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, oh my word. Your experienced players will do that, okay? They will know that and they'll be ready for these things, but you can keep them very much on their heels. And I'm not saying being inimical to them and being adversarial, but keeping them on their toes and thinking. By giving them these non-standard monsters, like what happens when they fight a troll that is impregnated with brown mold all over them. So when they use fire against him, all of a sudden they're in real, real trouble. Things like that, or the troll with even the ring of fire resistance on, or something like that, or have maybe that's a kind of a troll that they've never seen before. Something with that is extra planar or something like that, or has some kind of, maybe he has Nilboggism, or he's got a tween or something bizarre like that. These are the kind of things that will keep your player characters on their toes, and they're also springboards for you as a DM to further adventures. Oh my God, this guy's got a tween. How the hell did he get that? And when you answer those questions to yourself, all of a sudden you get the skeleton of a larger adventure, perhaps. And you deal with the same thing with mons with magic items. There should be no such thing as a plus one sword. There should be a sword that has got a wire wrapped hilt with a blue velvet cover on it that is got a, it's been ground to a strange sheen, and it's got notches that look like they've been carved purposely up and down its side. Well, how did that get that way? Where did it come from? If any of you is a first edition mod dungeon master or has played a first edition magic user, you will know how much effort must go into creation of a magic item. Magic users will not create a plus one sword that's just a plus one sword. No, it will be special because
Right.
there's so much toil that goes into it.
That is such a
Gandalf
great
doesn't.
point, because the mechanic may be a plus one sword, but so often we just lead with the mechanic instead of the story and the visual and the depth of meaning.
And I'll tell
So
you
good.
what,
That's
Wiley. Imagine this. Imagine your fight character is out, your halfling fighter is out in the wild, and he happens to come across a glaive, okay, and he finds out it's magical. Well, he goes to the next town and everybody in the town is looking at you and they're kind of quiet for a second, and they're like, they well, that was the glaive that was held by the sheriff of so and so, you know, the famous halfling sheriff so and so. Oh really? All of a sudden, you're not gonna, when you get that plus two glaive, the next one, you're not necessarily gonna want to give the first one up, are you? Even though the second one's mechanically better,
Right.
that second one all of a sudden has become important. And you're like,
Right.
I think I want to hang on to this one.
Yeah, yep. that is so.
I mean,
as a GM, I forget those kind of details so often. That's so good. Yeah,
and you can tie them into lore. Like, look at how Tolkien does it in The Hobbit. Because I just read this the other day to my boys. They find the troll horde. He doesn't just find a plus one sword. He finds Glamdring, the sword of the king of Gondolin.
Right.
You know, so now you've tied it to some little bit of lore in you know, that's not even related to your story.
Tying things to lore like that are very, very important. Like, for example, I'll give you a really good example. One of my formative experiences as a player all comes through my own experiences as playing the colorless mage of Perrinland, who is my first character of note, and I ran him for many, many, many years. Well, his whole backstory was that he was an apprentice to Morgan Kanan. And he once fought someone, another spellcaster, and then when he went back to gain his level and to train, he was explaining to Morgan Kanan what had happened. He says, "Explain the spell effect one more time." And he listened and he says, He goes, "Okay, well, that was a student of so-and-so. And you can tell because," and I'm sitting here thinking, listening to my DM going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a second. Not all magic missiles are the same. Oh, no, no, no. You can tell this one because this one trailed this kind of effect to it. And that means he was trained by so-and-so, or he was using this particular substitution for the material component. You can do that, you know, and if you do that, then you'll be able to get this effect." I'm sitting here thinking to myself, holy mother of God, this is opening up all kinds of different experiences and aspects of spellcasting to me. So now whenever you have spellcasters in my game, if you're not playing a convention game where I have to have everything be kind of standard so we're all speaking the same language, not necessarily will you hear everybody may have magic missile on their sheet, but they don't call it that. They might call it Archibald's bedeviling blast. And it might look totally different than yours. It might come as like hummingbirds coming out of their fingers, or it might come out as musical notes or something like that. These are the kind of things like I mean about being non-standard. And that's something that DMs can do, not only to enrich the what their game looks and sounds and feels like, but also it gives you a springboard to adventure. Because all of a sudden, don't you want to know a little bit about Archibald? Where the hell did they learn that spell? Maybe when I train next, I ought to go and find this Archibald. And when I gain my next level, so I can learn how to do that particular spell, because that was badass.
That's a great little hook too, because now I have a little narrative thread to pull.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe all of a sudden you start finding out about the deeds of Archibald, or maybe you start finding out other... you're going to a particular dungeon, you fight a bunch of stuff in that same region, and you go back to Morden Kanan, you're training, and he looks over at the potion in your pocket. He goes, "Hey, wait a second, what is that?" And you show him, it's a green potion, and you shake it. "Well, I did identify on it, and it was a potion of speed. That's Archibald's." "What? The Archibald?" Yeah. You can tell because it's slightly effervescent. Normally, potions of speed are red, and they're kind of like got a mercury kind of a density to them. But this one's light and effervescent like that, and it will last another turn more than normal because she specialized in those. All of a sudden, your jaw drops open as a player. Oh my God, Archibald again. And you've never even met this character, and all of a sudden she's become this big thing in your game.
This legend, yeah. Interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah, but details.
But again, that goes back to that whole idea of Rob Kuntz. Make things non-standard. Make things a little bit unusual. Feel free to vex the player characters a little bit by defying their expectations.
Love it.
Very nice.
Love it. That is awesome. That's good tips right there. Okay, golly, we are already getting to the end of our... kind of the end of our leash, man.
Man, you guys are just going too.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. We could do a Castle Entertainment series of things that I'm sure we'll get to over time. But is there anything else, Carlos, you wanted to announce, share? I know you've talked about a couple of projects that you're in the midst of, one that's just released for the GrogCon. Anything else you want to share with our listeners before we put a bow on this thing?
Yeah, well, I'll be also going to GrogCon again this year for those of you guys who are in the Orlando, Florida, or South American Southeast area, or just like to travel.
Yeah.
In October, early October, I'll be down there running games, and I'll be writing their official module again. Spoiler alert, their theme is against those giants this time. So you will see me to do, you'll see me coming up with a module that's going to be giant related.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That's cool. I'm so running that right now. The G123.
Oh,
for
wow.
Just an offline game. Yeah, we started streaming and we just took it offline just to remove the streaming element to cut my, you know, time way back. And what a great.
My module will take place slightly after the denouement of the Giant series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You will be dealing with some mop-up duty, a detail that may or may not have been missed by player characters. So that'll
there's so much in those damn giant modules. Yeah, and when you think about it, you know, a lot of times when you adventure, you just, you know, strap on your gear and head out. And you got to remember, you're going into the stronghold of freaking giants. Yeah. Like one of them can crush your party, much less a stronghold. So it's not a murder hobo deal, man. It just isn't. So
actually, the deeper you get into those modules, when you're into G2, G2 to me is actually the deadliest of those modules because of the environment. And the fact that you're dealing with so many, there's such a wide open area and part of the rift, especially where those dragons are and things like that. Oh, it's just brutal. It can be brutal.
That's, I would agree. I would agree. All right. Well, man, we sure appreciate you coming on. It's been too long between sessions. So one of the things we like to do on here is, you know, just provide tools and resources for players and or GMs. So again, if you're really, really into the Osric, sort of the, you know, BX, EX, AD&D, 2E, end of the game, Carlos's Patreon is chock loaded with, like he said, player characters, items, things. It's a great investment in your game. And then his adventures, like I said, man, they are tremendous. So castleentertainment.com, right? It's where we find you.
Absolutely. Yeah. CastleEntertainment.com or patreon.com/CastleEntertainment. One of the two. You can find me on Facebook as Castle Entertainment or as Carlos Lysing. Stop by, say hello. And I'm more than happy to chat, man. I'm accessible and I could talk about this stuff all day long. So
for days. Yeah. Right. Yep. Likewise. All right, man. And again, it's Castle, all lowercase, CASL, capital E, Entertainment. Castle Entertainment. So check them out. And again, Carlos, thanks for joining us, brother. It's good to see you again since Gary Con. Mateus, any last questions, nuggets, words?
No. All right. It's been great to have Carlos on, and hopefully he sees an uptick in sales.
That's right. Great. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. If you need some modules, get on it. Yep. Thanks again, Carlos. All right. So friends, be kind and be safe out there. And we will, I'm sure we'll run across you on a trade route or somewhere in a mountain vale or something out there in the land of Greyhawk. But thanks for hanging out with us.
You've been listening to the Greycast podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Mateus and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. You can find our podcast on Spotify and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.